to Mataco Talks. My name's Craig Perrin. I'm the VP of Sales at Mataco. This is our weekly topical discussion session focused on cryptocurrencies, digital assets, key topics that are going on across the marketplace. As usual, the session will be recorded and available for future release on the usual channels. This morning, great pleasure in introducing Benjamin Duval from Head of Digital Assets and Custody at Commerce Bank. Ben, good morning.
Hey, Craig. Thanks for having me. Thanks for the invite. And I'm looking forward to the discussion today.
Fantastic. Great to have you here. And Ben, look, let's jump in. We've got about 30 minutes. So lots and lots to talk about, given the fact that the market continues to move at phenomenal pace, daily change, daily announcements coming out. And you yourself have been very visible in terms of your thought leadership and your views on particularly the digital asset landscape, but also in terms of promoting that change across the marketplace. Listen, I'd love to get into a bit in terms of your views, particularly from a Commerce Bank perspective. You know, if you can just open us up with sort of what does digital assets mean for an institution like Commerce Bank at this current moment in time?
So for us, it's really the future. I think it's very straightforward that, I mean, you're a former industry colleague, so you know the size of the industry and what we're talking about when we talk about crypto or digital assets right now, which is still a small part of a huge securities industry. But I think what's very important is this is transformational. And the way we handle digital assets, I personally believe, and I think it's a strong view also within the bank, will be the way we handle all of our assets. So we will move traditional assets into that new digital world. So what you do now is you lay the foundation, you look at assets you can now already transform, shape the ecosystem, but then really build the future within your organization. Because I think one thing is important, digital assets are different. And I think that's the challenge also in the transformation. Suddenly, assets, and if you look at certain ways of how do you pay for those assets, so cash lag, also very likely in some kind of DLT setup. And then you look at other components of your organization, look at trade finance, for example, where we all suddenly have DLT components. Everything is related to wallet, to wallets, to keys, and so on. So just one of the challenges, I think, for all organizations are, those are different silos. So yeah. Cash, assets, and trade usually are not as closely related, but suddenly in this new digital environment, they come together. One of the challenges in digital assets overall, I mean, a lot of things are new there, and a lot of things have to be thought of and thought through for a large organization to adopt those.
A lot of banks, as you and I would know, manage transaction banking businesses that include trade finance, they include cash, they include security services. And quite clearly from what you're saying, all of those areas are going to be impacted in some shape or form. Do you actually think that the financial community, the institutions that you know we both are connected to, do you think that element of change in terms of digital assets is still underestimated, or do you think now it's starting to be understood?
Well, I think there's is a twofold, right? There is this, let's jump into the quick crypto revenue stream as quickly as possible. But then everybody realized that that's a little bit difficult to just do quickly. And it might not be the business case on its own merit. But what I truly believe is, actually years ago, I never would have thought Bitcoin would make it to the regular banking world, even though I'm quite interested in the field just because of certain regulatory topics and so on. But client demand really created a situation for a regulator to jump in and say, well, if the clients are buying it, anyways, it doesn't matter if I allow it or not. Maybe I want to give them access in a more regulated and safe way. So that's why suddenly Bitcoin is an option for banks. But then if you look at it from that perspective, it's a great option because it's a mature asset, which is digital, which is actually one of the most difficult ones, also from an AML, KYC, public blockchain perspective. So very tricky to handle and manage. I mean, that's where we have a lot of discussions with MetaCo and other providers, because that's a true challenge. How do we make that safe for us, but also for our clients? But that's a great start because it's already a mature asset which you can integrate and work with and lay the basis, I think, for digital assets overall, because you need to start somewhere. And I think operationalizing and going back to the organizational challenges, operationalizing is a true challenge because there are a lot of people, as you know, in a bank who have a say and actually have an important role to look at very specific asset aspects of AML, KYC, cybersecurity, and all of those different topics. And before you operationalize, it's nice to have a workshop and generally discuss topics, but it's different when somebody has to sign that they're comfortable with you doing it. And I think that's really what this whole topic is about. And having Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies as a gateway opportunity is something all banks should look at. And I think everybody's evaluating if and how they want to enter that space. I think it's a great opportunity to really start that change with an organization. Even if you come to the conclusion, well, Bitcoin isn't for me, if you seriously went through all the steps, at least you know, well, but then other digital assets might not have the same risk profile. Maybe I can work with those.
Yeah. I mean, look, you mentioned something, well, you mentioned a number of really interesting topics there, particularly for me in terms of underlying client demand. Right. So the underlying client demand typically, you know, makes banks reflect on the direction that they're taking. Ultimately, they have sophisticated clients. Those clients look to expand the asset classes that they're holding today and offering to their clients. How much of that underlying client demand is going to set the agenda within a bank like Commerce Bank?
I think it's twofold. I think it truly does set the agenda, but what people underestimate when I have these discussions, I mean, you are an industry veteran, right? So you really know what I'm talking about. But if I talk to people coming more from the cryptocurrencies DeFi world, they underestimate for us, there's a lot we would like to offer, but there are two things we have to look at. Is it compliant and within the rules and risk parameters we as a bank can offer or look into and then offer a product to a client? And very important, is it regulatory compliant? And I think the bigger step here, as you see the adoption in different countries, is really how forward-looking is your regulator? How forward-looking is your legislation to allow you to look into the topic in a safe and meaningful manner? So yes, client demand is important. You wouldn't build it if there is not none. But really, in this space, it's about how far does your regulator allow you to go to handle it in a meaningful and safe manner and regulatory compliant. And I think that's a little bit the difference to many other topics in the past. You developed a product, you tried to get the regulator to understand the product, show where it's really sitting within the current regulatory framework, and then you got the product across, and maybe there needed to be adjustments later on because the regulator made some changes, found out some things do work, don't work, fine. But here it's completely different. You have an asset which exists, and you have to somehow change regulation to make it fit the current banking environment. I think that's a very different aspect. So client demand is great, but you really need the regulator and the rules around it to allow you to engage in that as a class.
It's not surprising that discussing financial market developments, that the regulator comes back to us pretty quickly, right? It doesn't matter what asset class we're talking about. The regulator plays a fundamental role. So if you look at central bank adoption, if you look at regulatory support and adoption of the asset class of digital assets, you know, do you see, I mean, obviously within your region, within Germany, do you see favorable support? Do you see a region, I mean, obviously from my perspective, I'm looking at client opportunity globally. So I'm seeing what's coming out of Asia, what's coming out of the US, Switzerland and Germany in particular are very interesting for us at the moment. Do you see a region where the regulatory and central bank adoption is leading the pack and driving at pace, and other regions could look to that particular regulator, central bank, as almost leading the line?
So you mentioned the two markets, Switzerland and Germany. For Switzerland, I think they were very early, very fast. I mean, that's why we have Crypto Valley and those famous new little hotspots. There's one major difference. It's not within the unified market for financial services, right? So that's very important. So if you then switch over and say you want to look at regulated European markets, I think there Germany is very far ahead with a very favorable and knowledgeable regulator. I mean, we really have seen that in our discussions with BaFin, but also with legislators, we can really see that for years they have accompanied our developments as Commerzbank very early on, but there's KfW, MEAG, Deutsche Börse Group. There are a lot of major players in Germany we have engaged in and others have engaged in who really did for years already do a lot of use cases, and BaFin was always there to take a look, to understand, to really discuss with us. And now they have a profound know-how to really push out very forward-looking regulations, sometimes really leading the pack. Here and there we saw suggestions, we were really surprised. That was really forward-looking. That was even further than we would believe as a bank is easily possible. So I think Germany has two aspects there. They have a very good BaFin as a regulator, very forward-looking. We have the legislature who really understands the potential of blockchain overall, because I think it could be transformative to many other industries. And that's where it really kicks in, right? When you have your supply on a blockchain, you have your cash on a blockchain somehow, or a payments rails connected to a blockchain, you have your assets on a blockchain, everything is on a blockchain, and can digitally interact, you can use AI and so on. That really creates a strong momentum. And the legislator really understood that. And our Bundesbank is also very forward-looking. If you look at the last tests, where Commerzbank also participated on the DLT-based trigger solution, where we integrate old rails. I always say, and I'm not allowed to say old, but the way we always did stuff in Target 2, to a digital technology and connect that to asset chains. I think that's very, very smart way to marry the two worlds and maybe have a quick fix solution. I mean, there are different things we're looking in. Commerzbank is also part of the Finality consortium. So we are also interested to see that development, which is, by the way, now very much moving forward in the UK. But I think if you look at the continental European context, I think we have a lot of favorable conditions in Germany, leaving aside that, for example, France, the Central Bank of France is also looking at central bank money and really pushing use cases and topics there. But I think also we have this European securities law, electronic securities law, where we can issue bonds on a DLT, register them somewhere if they are a traditional security, or register them more or less ourselves if we get a crypto security. But that would mean you can handle traditional bonds, funds, and others on a DLT going forward. I hope the law passes soon, and it will be in 2022. So that's very forward-looking from the regulator for crypto with the BaFin license, from the legislature with regard to electronic securities, and from our Bundesbank, which is of course one participant in the overall system, but who's very innovative and looking at how they can support the industry and the move of the industry towards digital assets, and well, trying to find solution or to have new risk introduced into the system.
Just coming back to Commerzbank, right? So in terms of now, if we think about the strategy for change that you've got to go through in your organization to take that organization on a journey, if we look at how your organization is structured today in the traditional asset space, where you are holding assets for your clients in global markets and you're reliant on and working alongside a sub-custody network that underpins that capability that you can offer to your clients, how are you going to advocate for that change in a large organization? And how's that strategy going to need to build consensus internally, given the many, many years of infrastructure that's embedded and built and successful? How are you going to drive that change, given the fact that the market is demanding the change, that the underlying client appetite is there, the regulator support is there? Now you've got to look at your infrastructure, the sub-custody network that supports you so well, and drive that change through. How's that project? How's that going to work?
I think the challenge is quite big, right? Because it's, we all know there's a resistance to change, the way we did things in the past and so on. What I found is very helpful, and it's always my advice for other organizations that really gave us an additional kicker, is top management support. So we can now see that with our CEO giving out a very public statement where we're an adventure together with Deutsche Börse, that he wants to actively shape a digital asset ecosystem. So that's a very strong statement, which translates to the market, but also translates internally. Also, when I look at it in the last 1 or 2 years, we had certain leadership changes besides the CEO. And you can see that with most new managers coming in, almost all of them actually, either they're now very positive towards digital assets, or they have always been, but now get support on a more broader level, on the board level, executive management level. On our side in the investment bank or capital markets, as we call it these days, we had very strong support from the beginning. But now that translates better into the organization. I think the one challenge we always have, and we are addressing in a very simple way, is if you engage certain areas, there will be 10, 20 people who have a say. And if you explain something very new each time to each person and they all have a new question and a new problem, which you might have discussed already earlier, that's a topic. So what we tend to do now, to ask the top manager who has support and is very positive towards towards certain topics, to name people in his area who really are the go-to person for digital assets or for crypto topics, and they really have a management mandate to sit in on meetings, translate, and also have direct management access for quick decision making. I think that's one of the very important topics we come across. But then, you know, we have a technology and invested in that, and traditional assets we have to handle. I think the second bit after you addressed how to move the organization forward is how or where to build and put that digital asset bit. Do you do it in parallel? Do you go into the traditional world? How to translate it? And to be honest, we haven't finalized our discussions there, because it's quite tricky. Either you want to be very quick and then you just plug it into the old rails, meaning you adopt all the topics you have with a little fractionalized system environment, you know, many system, different stacks you're running, or is an approach where you can have a more streamlined, centralized digital assets, but also other digital components bits when you look at cash, when you look at trade. Can you have that a little bit more centralized to, in the end or in the long run, be able to switch out 5-10 years down the road the traditional part and switch to a more digital system behind it? Because it's the marrying the core banking system to the new digital world, which is truly the challenge.
And is that going to be the case, right? Is one of the major challenges untying the legacy capital markets infrastructure that's been in place for X number of years? Is that going to be married in? Are you going to be able to join that together? Or is it a case of bringing new infrastructure into the organization and retiring some of those legacy platforms?
The problem is, very straightforward. If you look at the percentage of our business that digital assets are and will be maybe in the next 1, 2, 3 years, it's limited.
Yeah.
However you want to put it, and maybe that's not the statement everybody wants to give right now, but if we are honest, if you look at the percentage, not that big. So it will never replace in the short run the current systems. But on the other hand, you don't want to build a new siloed system for each different application. So you don't want crypto, digital assets, and some cash components and trade all to be so segregated that you run into the same problems you have now with all these little island solutions for special topics, which are very expensive to run and sometimes lose their business as justification when a business cycle is over. So that's a little bit of the tricky situation. But what we are looking at is truly trying to build something which grows while keeping in mind it might shrink the traditional bit. I mean, that's, I think, basically the way my current thinking is to approach it. But there are a lot of architecture, IT guys, and others who might have a different opinion here and there. And that's the discussion to be had. That's operationalizing something. That's the true challenge. It's not talking about, oh, I want to have this. It's about how do you actually make it happen and how to future-proof it? Because you don't want to make an investment now and then it's obsolete a few years down the road because you can't use it because you put it in a place that dead end, you connected it in our terms to a dead end system, which will be switched off. And then you have to start anew somewhere else. And I think that's the challenge we have.
You talk about infrastructure, you talk about links. And if we look at how in the traditional asset space, the connections between multiple banks come together to provide a sub-custody network that facilitates, you know, clients' asset movements across global markets. Do you see, how do you see the sub-custody and global custody connection in the digital asset space? Do you see that existing? Do you see that as an option to potentially support your clients, to support global clients holding assets within your infrastructure? Or do you see the sub-custody piece moving to one side and not being relevant?
Well, I think that's the problem of the whole digital asset space. That future is not 100% clear. It really is who enters that space and how it will devolve in the shorter midterm. One thing I know for sure is I will have to connect to different DLT blockchain solutions to service and hold the assets my clients want to have, right? That's one thing I know for sure. I have to connect my clients to the solutions, maybe Bitcoin, but also others, where there's client demand, and it could be new traditional assets or new rails, where my clients has demand. That's what we do now, right? I mean, we have a sub-custody network where we provide safekeeping in markets where our clients demand safekeeping. I mean, that's very straightforward. And I think the same thing will happen in the digital asset space. The interesting bit is, will you be the one and being part of organizing those underlying DLT securities chains, and who has which role in that? Because a bank, if you look at it from a logical point of view, could move downstream or upstream, right? You could do everything for the client, but you could also move more in the CSD or into the sub-custody space. Because imagine that if we would stick in the current world we have today, and each country, which would not be really beneficial, but each country has their own CSD running their own local chain, right? Have their own solution per country, but it's standardized and there's an industry standard to interact with those. Why do you need sub-custody? Because then suddenly it could become just a very standardized digital connection to a place, and you have a AI-driven digital connectivity piece to that chain, which manages your sub-custody. So that could be one of the solutions. Hopefully not the one, but it could be one of the solutions. Yeah. But there could be other solutions. If you look at Europe, if you look at the pilot regime, there seems to be a strong trend to decentralize a little bit. And that could be a game changer, because it could create one capital market in Europe, for example, or it could create global digital asset chains where different countries connect. Maybe a ICSD version with more global players and more global connectivity, but decentralized. So I think there are many different opportunities at play. And I think the most important thing is, if you're one of the players in that chain, so if you're a custodian, if you're sub-custodian, if you're a client-facing banker, that's very important. If you're not really in the custody game, but you hold assets for your clients, but also if you're CSD, there are huge amounts of opportunities, and you could be the one either disintermediated or you could be the one disintermediating. But I think one thing is very clear, however which scenario plays out, there will be certain players who miss out. And in the past, it has always been, if you don't participate and don't play, you're probably not the one being asked to join later on. I mean, that's a very unlikely scenario usually.
Yeah, I mean, I hear you, and I wholeheartedly support that. You know, I don't think there's a choice anymore in terms of will this happen or not, without a doubt, given the level of adoption that's coming across multiple banks across global regions. It's clearly now an evolving market, which majority of the banks are realizing they have to have a project or a feasibility study, and many do. There's a couple of questions, Ben, just coming through the screen here. I mean, some of which you touched on briefly, but people are interested in terms of how difficult it is to introduce innovation in such a giant bank. You know, is it something where you are that sort of single voice? But I think, you know, as you mentioned briefly, the CEO within your organization, having that backing from the top is useful. But, you know, do you see now consensus being achieved within Commerce Bank that innovation is something which has to be adopted?
To be honest, we always had that. We were very lucky that we had an incubator who really looked into DLT topics already 2017, I think, were the first use cases we did. That's how I came across the topic. So, and I think that's a very good learning for many organizations. You need management support, but you need people who have an understanding who will execute, and you create them by really engaging. We did that for many years. We had a lot of use cases. We did a lot of tryouts, POCs, and now we're doing a first MVPs with digital assets, but also with trade, also with cash. And by that, you create people in all different departments in an organization who are interested and who would like to join. And once they join, they create a know-how, which they then later have to really contribute once it goes forward. I always tell the story, how did I get to the space? I mean, I got to the space because we did a lot of use cases involving custody, and where you need traditional custody. And I was interested in the digital asset worlds, so I could join, participate, and shape the POCs we did in the past from a custody point of view. By that, generating an input from the business side, participating and helping with the POCs, but also generating know-how, which I can now use to engage and shape the bank. And I think that's the way you do it. You have this grassroots movement of people who are interested in the topic, and you give them an opportunity and a platform to really join, but also get industry know-how, because it's different than reading something on the internet, where it lacks a lot of, or sometimes lacks the depth you need as a financial institution, but really engage topics. You have this grassroots movements, and you have management awareness and support to really drive change. And I think that's the two important things. And then it already automatically generates it, because as we all know, everywhere people who really like the topic crypto, there are a lot of people who like the topic digital assets, there are a lot of people who like digital transformation. So if you get those people, give those people a platform and an opportunity to join in, that's great. That's where you create the grassroots movement within an organization, and then with management support, you might be able to convince one or the other in the middle who might not be as open to change here and there. But to be honest, I haven't met anyone who's just against change. I think it's more about education and getting people to understand where you want to go and to demystify certain topics, because that's also a problem we encounter quite a lot. And I think you guys, other vendors we have talked to with regard to chain analysis in the Bitcoin space already do a very good job at helping us educate our executives about security, about where the future could grow from a technology point of view, about risks involved, and being very open and transparent about it. I think that's the way to go forward, and that's how you drive that change. But you need people who want change as a grassroots movement, and you need management, top management support to really enable that change. And as I said before, having people in individual areas being the go-to person for a topic. I'm the head of digital assets for the capital markets area, so all the asset parts are my topic, but we have people who now have been named for compliance, for legal. We have a DLT lab, of course, which really is a delivery organization that you guys engage in, who also help us deliver our visions. So I think that's important, and that helps. And those three components really make make change much more likely, and it would, which really helped us, I think, to be one of the ones leading the pack. Because there's a different thing when you announce stuff and just start, or when you actually build something in the background and announce when you're done. And the latter is more the Commerzbank approach.
And great insight into the challenges, but also the opportunity. We are actually over on time. We could end up with it's just a conversation between you and I, which is more than happy to do. Just before we close, from your perspective, it's important that the financial community, the banks of all nature of size and shape come together in terms of adoption. Is there a message from you that in terms of your view to the community that really are still sitting and watching? I get a sense that there's resistance to be a first mover inside of a lot of organizations, right? Often at time for launch of products, institutions can be keen to get to market with a product and to be ahead of the game, to be top of the league table. But there does appear with this particular product to be a resistance to be too early and a resistance to go first. Any view on banks that are focused purely in-house or feasibility rather than launch?
Well, I think it's you don't have to be the first, but you have to be ready to switch it on the moment you feel comfortable, because the lead time is much larger than in other topics. There's a lot to look at. So if you just look a little bit at feasibility here and there, but you don't have people really sign up and put the name, I'm comfortable from a risk perspective, I'm comfortable from a AML KYC perspective, I'm comfortable from a security tech perspective. If you don't have those people aligned, you're not ready. So I think the message is, even if you're not the one who first wants to offer it in the marketplace, you have to start developing it, talking about crypto, but digital assets, to be able to switch it on, because the lead time is quite a bit longer than in everything else we have seen, because it's quite different. And also from a technology perspective, quite different. So even if you as an organization are hesitant to directly offer it, build it. I mean, you can still decide. We don't use, for example, cryptocurrencies, but we will skip that and go to digital assets in the next step. But you have everything built up. As I said before, you have the people, you need to educate anyways. You have the stakeholder buy-in, and then you're just a board decision away from launching or not launching. I think that's very important to keep in mind, because if you're left behind and if you don't acquire those skills, you will surely be not the one shaping the ecosystem. And it's a digital market, and we have all seen what happens in digital markets, looking at the large players around the internet these days.
And we are over a time. We could go on. It's been an absolute pleasure. Great to connect again. Appreciate your insight. Keep pushing for the change. And I look forward to talking to you again. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Craig. Thanks, Mitako, for the invite. And always happy to talk.
See you. So next week on Mataku Talks, we have Peter Hoffman, CEO of Custer Digits. So until then, this will be posted on the usual sites, and we'll talk to you again at the next session. Thanks all. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye.